But I'm not going to go into that information now this evening, but possibly after the teachings tomorrow, if people stay and sit down for a moment after he leaves the room, I have lots of really great announcements to make and a lot of information to share, and I've come to some kind of understanding about how important it is for the Tibetan lineages to be held for a really, really, really long time, for us to be aware of what's the situation that the monasteries are going through with the growth of the monasteries and how important all of them are to the survival of the, by the benefaction of all of us, that we can help not only in receiving the Dharma and practicing the Dharma, but possibly if we're very successful in our lifestyles to help them somewhat financially as well. Because they're going through a time now with the Chinese control of Tibet that there's a lot less Tibetans that are being allowed to leave Tibet, and understanding the role of how a monk is raised in a monastery is quite unique and special in this world, and not too many other traditions start like that. And if the Chinese don't allow the Tibetan families to allow their children to be allowed to go into a monastery, because we don't allow too often, like that, I'll share that information with you more later. On behalf of Geshe Huzwa Gelsen La, our resident teacher, and Geshe Losan Sotrum, our center director, and the board of members of Thupten Dargye Ling, and the students of Thupten Dargye Ling, and the past board members, and all of those that worked so many years for Geshe La's center, and it's really an honor from our heart to bring you to Thupten Dargye Ling and to have you share with us lines of experience. And I was sharing with the students earlier about some of the experience that I learned from you, and I hope that we can all benefit from that. Thank you, Rinpoche.
Don't you Jama ye je che de ya zo de so na chin jo che la che sa ba ye le ma ye zo me ge che ge ta ye ba do ba je me de jo ni ne ge ba da be so ye me de da ra mon te jo la ze che ge ba be Express my appreciation to the members of the Thubten Thakyalin. While I wanted to remember the legacy and the kindness of the late Geshe Chödöm Gyaltsena, who established the center, Dharma Center, and in California, Los Angeles, where many people received benefit, the teachings of the Lord Buddha, and so I'd like to remember his kindness. At the same time, I would like to say 1990 was, I think, the first time I came to visit Thubten Thakyalin. Then Thubten Thakilam was the location. I cannot remember the name, but somewhere it wasn't really considered as the best part of the Los Angeles. And but anyway, the Geshe-la founded a center somewhere the people needed very much, Dharma Center. So then after that, I visited Geshe-la in the Dharma Center for a number of occasions. And Geshe-la has been very much kind and received me each time and given me the best of the treatment. So today I'd like to remember Geshe-la's kindness, and I'd like to serve what Geshe-la was wishing for. And I was actually on the journey when I received the invitation from Thubten Thakilam, asking me to come and teach for a longer period of time. But because of my schedule was more or less fixed already, so all I could do was spend 3 days from my schedule in order to serve Geshe-la's, whatever Geshe-la was wishing for. Same time, I like to serve the Dharma activities that have been conducting nowadays by Ganden Shatsi. I belong to the member of Ganden Shatsi since the age of 13, and I received my education and everything through the monastery. We call it the Ganden Shatsi. So two purposes. One way is I like to serve the Geshe-la's wish. Another way is I like to serve the Ganden Shatsi monastery that I belongs to. And so, in a way, I'm very much appreciate with the invitation receiving from Thubten Thakilam. And I said, okay, I'm going to come and spend 3 days instead of a longer period. And I'm going to give the teachings on the Lamrim, the short text of Lamrim. And I always feel comfortable to give the teachings on the Lamrim rather than give the initiations on bigger and higher tantric initiations. And so Thubten Thakilam was kind, accepting my suggestion, giving teaching on a short Lamrim text. So this is how the my coming to Thubten Thakilam and this time, and also finding that Thubten Thakilam is going through transaction, and I'm very impressed with the smooth transaction that been carried out by members of the Thubten Thakilam and the abbots of the Ganden Shatsi. Members of the Ganden Shatsi, seems everything worked out so peacefully, so I very much appreciate. And now, actual the start of my teaching, let's say the Lamrim is one of the teaching, complete teaching of the Mahayana. And even though there are many high tantric initiations in the teachings, we are fortunate to receiving them from time to time, but the Lamrim might be the fundamental and whole kind of completion of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And so believing that Lamrim teaching will be the fundamental of the Buddhist teaching. Also, I would say Lamrim teaching will be the formation of the Lord Buddha's teaching. And without receiving the teaching of the Lamrim as for the introduction or formation of the practice of the Mahayana, and the receiving initiation and the practice of the sadhanas may not be considered as a completion of the Mahayana teaching and practice. And so let's say now, the starting Mahayana teaching, starting the teaching of the Lamrim, and the Lama Tsongkhapa was formed a number of the teachings on Lamrim, great Lamrim Chemu, and medium and short teaching of the Lamrim. And this is considered as one of the short form of the Lamrim teaching. And I find that this is very convenient, and you can relate the teaching of the Lamrim Chemu if you have already received it. And almost every chapters have been, you can relate it one by one. And whereas other short Lamrims, I find it not that much convenient, easier to relate it. So I always feel comfortable to teach on the Lamrim teaching, which short of the Lamrim teaching I chosen this time. And as we know that today, we all are very fortunate, including myself, being able to discuss on the teaching of the Lamrim. And the teaching of the Lamrim is still around, and it is intact and very, very complete teaching. We are fortunate to have it. And today we are discussing and enjoying myself giving teaching on Lamrim, and yourself is receiving it. So we must feel that we all are so fortunate to have it in our own heart, completely concentrated on the teaching of the Lord Buddha, particularly teaching of the Lamrim Chemu. Teaching of the Lamrim Chemu is nothing but collected teaching of the all essential part of the Lord Buddha's teachings. It is including the essence of the teachings from Four Noble Truths, which is considered as first turning wheel of the Dharma. It is included the essence of the teaching, second turning wheel of the Dharma, Panchaparamita Sutras. And also it included the essence of the teachings, third Dharma teaching, wheel of the turning Dharma teaching. So in all, it included every teaching, major teachings, essence of the major teachings of the Lord Buddha. Not only included, but it's formed completely the way it is formed and formulated is the according to the experience, the stages of the your progress of the spirituality you are practicing in the terms of this path to enlightenment. So now we are very much fortunate. And Lama Tsongkhapa formed the shorter Lamrim Chemu. And I would like all of us to recite the first verses together. If you have the English translation.
I prostrate before you.
Now I'm going to read the Tibetan version of the first verses. Penzo gili chewe tumbe ku thaye doye rewa kumye son. Mali sheja chishin siwe tu shaji zogo de langu cha salote. So here, the Lama Tsongkhapa was paying homage to Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, who is a founder of the Buddhism 2,500 years ago in India. And the way he paid homage is he tried to expressing the qualities of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni. And the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's qualities, the qualities of his body and his speech and his mind. And the quality of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni is, body of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni is not just formed, not because of the he was born as normal way, and father and mother conceived and born and then grown up and then completed his activities. But he was born from the ocean of the collection of the merit, or the complete form of the merit. So he was born with the major and minor marks, 32 major marks and 18 minor marks. Each of the marks corresponding specific collection of the merit and virtual actions that he has been practicing through countless eons, we call it. So not only Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, let's say that even individuals over us, we have a human body, and we have the different forms of the slightly different forms of the human body. Each person has a different kind of the lookings and a different way of the smilings and size of the body and the way of the forming your face and the arms and the legs. Each of these aspects must be corresponding to the karma that we call it the throwing karma that we accumulated in previous lifetimes. So each of the aspect of the human body we have, each quality of the human body we have, and that each one of us are looking more or less different, the size is different, looking is different, and that we raised in a different community and the different parents, and everything is different, actually. Everything is different, so individuals, we are different from each other. We are in the same in the way we are being human and being born in, from the parents, and we are suffering and we are looking for the teachings of the Lord Buddha. And that is the features that we all sharing together. But also we have the individual characters, that's different, making, causing us different from each other. The way this is differences are happened, differences are existing with us, it is because we accumulated, we collected the every different the actions and the different karmas we collected. The way we are collecting the karma as spiritual actions, even today from during the discussion session of the Lamrim teaching, Lamrim discussion session for an hour and a half, but we are sitting together, but each of us, we are receiving and creating, accumulating the karmas more or less differently, according to the motivations and the understandings and everything we have. So, because of the different causes, we should expect the different result and the different lives and the different rebirths, we should expect it. So the same way Lord Buddha Shakyamuni has a special quality, physical qualities, is because of the he has been practicing like compassion, greater compassion and altruistic mind throughout countless eons. So his physical feature and image is formed according to great accumulation of the merit he practiced. He accumulated. And then now the speech of the Lord Buddha is also very special. And it has 60 different unique qualities that makes okay disciples of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni can enjoy it very much. Not only enjoy it, but spiritual way we can receive the blessings and we can gain great realizations. Speech of the Lord Buddha is maybe one of the powerful that delivering the teaching of the Lord Buddha through the speech of the Lord Buddha. Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching, like a Buddhism, is continuing last 2,500 years. The continuation is possibility of the continuation is because of the power of Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's speech. Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's speech that has 60 very special unique qualities. Therefore, the teaching of the Lord Buddha, so-called Buddhism, is still continuing. Not only continuing, but it is reaching to the four continents, I would say. The people who need the teaching of the Lord Buddha from different continents, they are receiving and enjoying. And that is the power of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's speech. Now, the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's, the mind or consciousness, whatever you call it, it has enormous power. Lord Buddha Shakyamuni can understand each and every individual's disciples' feeling and their beliefs and their level, their capacity. So enabled him to give the teachings of the Lord Buddha according to the needs and the appropriate to the levels of the each individual disciples. So one could say that any single teachings that the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni presented to any disciples, it surely going to be affected. Not only affected, but it's going to be given a positive impact on each and every individual. Positive impact, that means that each individual who are looking for the teaching, basically they are looking for teaching basically because each and every individual looking for the answer, the simple words, looking for answer. Why individuals, each and every individual, students are looking for answer is because each one has carrying endless issues. Issues that need to be addressed. So teachings from the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni is going to give answers for every individual's questions. And that Lord Buddha Shakyamuni is the way presenting his teaching or answering is may not be the way we are everyday life. We are hearing some kind of reply, the response from your friend, respond from your parents and your relatives. In everyday life, we do look for the response that kind of we could feel, we could expect that going to support, going to say yes and agree. Whatever beliefs you have, anything respond that doesn't matching, does not go matching and supporting the beliefs you have, we usually end up disappointing. But the way Lord Buddha Shakyamuni is teaching is not the way that Lord Buddha Shakyamuni gave the teachings in many different ways. Many different ways that according to how he can see the individual's capacity and the understandings. So normally we say we are not happy to hear the response from your parents and your friends when they are not agreeable, not appreciative, then we are disappointed. But when Lord Buddha Shakyamuni something which is not supporting your belief, but would not disappoint you, make you sense. And that is the power and quality of the Buddha Shakyamuni. So now, Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, when we think of Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, immediately we feel that, he was the founder of the Buddhism 2,500 years ago. Okay, now we can see the image of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni in the temple. So that is the way we are referring Lord Buddha Shakyamuni through image of the Buddha Shakyamuni statue in the temple here. But the correct way of referring the image of the Buddha Shakyamuni, that standing before our individual's own eye, we should recall the quality of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, qualities of his mind and consciousness. We call it the enlightenment mind. And the qualities of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's speech, which has 60 unique qualities, that we should refer to his body, physical body, which has 32 and 80 months, 32 major and 80 minor months. And each of those qualities are born from the accumulation of the merit that he has been practicing for three countless eons, only sick for helping mother sentient beings, okay? So every time I would suggest when you visit the temples and seeing images of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni, it is really viable to refer the qualities of the Buddha Shakyamuni, like his speech and his mind, or enlightened mind, and his physical bodies. Okay, now let's go the second line, second verses of the short Lamrim text. I would like to request you to read it in English first. Dame Dumbadi, Sage Chu, Jerin Zeba Kunji, Kunam, Tang Mishing, Drive number one, Mepam Jambi, and the Chancellor. Okay, now the second line is the verses that Lama Tsongkhapa was paying homage to the Maitreya Buddha and the Manjushri, who are known as the main disciple, sometimes we say children of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni. And the realizations that Maitreya Buddha and the Manjushri bear is basically because of that they've been practicing Mahayana path for many countless lifetimes and the eons, and therefore they became a great disciple of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni. They became a Maitreya Buddha and the Manjushri. And the Manjushri and the Maitreya Buddha are manifestation, and they do manifest it in countless and countless realms and world, according to the needs of the disciples, according to the ripening, the positive karmas that been shown by individual disciples around the world, around the continent. And basically, the Maitreya Buddha Shakyamuni, Maitreya Buddha, is the one, the responsible disciple of the Lord Buddha Shakyamuni. We call it the hidden implications of the Prajnaparamita Sutra. Lord Buddha Shakyamuni gave it on the Walcha Peak 2,500 years ago. We call it the Prajnaparamita Sutra, where the Mahayana teaching, we call it hidden the subject or hidden like topics of the Prajnaparamita Sutra was founded or presented by Maitreya Buddha through the teaching of the Abhisamaya Alankara and the ornament of the sutras. And there are a number of the texts teachings have been presented by Maitreya Buddha, where he expressed the hidden subject or topics, like the way we practice in the process of the developing compassion, the way we are practicing the process of developing altruistic mind, and the six perfections and so forth. It's been well explained in the teachings that Maitreya Buddha presented. And then with Manjushri, he presented the literal, I would say, literal meanings of the Pranjanaparamita Sutra. It's all wisdom part, wisdom of the understanding of the shunyata, emptiness, we call it emptiness. So the tradition of the teaching and the practice of the wisdom, understanding that dealing with understanding of the emptiness is presented by the Manjushri, and we also call it the method part, the tradition of the method, tradition of the compassion and the altruistic mind. Practice of the altruistic mind and the compassion is founded through teaching of the Maitreya Buddha. So Maitreya Buddha is the responsible master establishing the tradition of the process of practicing process of the compassion in the altruistic mind, and Manjushri is the responsible master and responsible master that the finding process of the practicing wisdom, understanding shunyata, emptiness. So the completion of the Mahayana teaching and the Mahayana path, once you have the both tradition, both the practice, wisdom part and the method part. Method part means involving the compassion and altruistic mind, whole process of the method. And the wisdom part is the way we studied, way we can understand the reasoning and every process, that being a wisdom part. When you have both, then it's known as the completion of the Mahayana part. So now the Lamrim is the teaching of the Lamrim is the formation, how one can receive the teaching of the Mahayana path, and how one can develop the completion of the Mahayana path. So there is a sense that the wisdom understanding the emptiness is giving you implication that the practicing the Mahayana path is completely opposite of the practicing teaching, any kind of teaching that very much involved with the blind faith. Now here, Mahayana teaching is very much involved with the teaching of the wisdom, understanding, emptiness, interdependent. It gives you the whole range of your knowledge and expanding your belief, expanding your wisdom. So it's a completely different world. And then now, teaching of the compassion and altruistic mind, it gives you the sense, implication that whatever you have the understandings about the emptiness will not be only intellectual. It's going to imply and touch your heart. So it has the quality of the heart in the feeling. So combination of the feeling that is that altruistic mind, compassion becomes the major part of the, your feeling. And they're going to give you the sense that your understanding, your beliefs are completely the open, and there is a great sense of the wide and knowledge. It's because of the wisdom, understanding, interdependent, emptiness. So to achieve the, now, this implies you that to achieve the state of the enlightenment that every one of us looking for, both practicing the Sutrayana, both practicing the Tantrayana, everyone who's looking for, that is the state of the enlightenment. But to achieve it, we must have the both wisdom, understanding, emptiness, interdependence, and the altruistic mind, feeling of the altruist and the compassion. Without the one of them, they will not be possible to achieve the state of the enlightenment. So to have both qualities, both completion of the teaching, both qualities, we must study the form of the Lamrim, where clearly explaining the unique and the core of the Mahayana. Core of the Mahayana is nothing but combination of the altruistic compassion, one part, combination of the wisdom understanding of the interdependent. Once you combine the both, then you will be entitled to be known as Mahayana practitioner. Okay? So now I would like to request you to go the third line where Lama Tsongkhapa paid homage to Nagarjuna in the Asanga in English. Okay, now here the third line is where Lama Tsongkhapa paid homage to Nagarjuna and Asanga, who are the lineage holders of the two different traditions. Tradition of the practicing the complete process of the, developing compassion, developing altruistic mind. That is one tradition. That tradition came through Maitreya Buddha, through Asanga. And the tradition, the way we can develop the complete process of wisdom, understanding of the emptiness, which is literal meaning, literal subject, meaning of the Pranjanaparamita Sutra. Actually, Pranjanaparamita Sutra is the responsible Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching, forming that teaching of the Mahayana. Teaching of the Mahayana is born from the Sutra, Pranjanaparamita Sutra, Lord Buddha Shakyamuni given, and known as wheel of the Dharma, second wheel of the Dharma that Buddha Shakyamuni turned on the Rajagir Valchapik. So then the Nagarjuna continued and he carried out the tradition of the process of practicing wisdom, emptiness, understanding emptiness, or you can say shunyata in Sanskrit, and also sometimes we use the wisdom understanding, interdependent and emptiness, two different words, and the names gives each one gives you a special kind of the understandings, and those two different understandings are corresponding each other very, very firmly and supporting each other. Concept of the interdependent and the concept of shunyata, they are actually we cannot divide it, we cannot separate them from each other, but they are going to emerge. They are going to emerge into one into the another. When you have the complete understanding of the emptiness, your understanding of the interdependence is going to be more confirmed and clear. When you have the understanding of the interdependent, then your understanding of the emptiness is going to be more clear and more confirmed. So that teaching is known as tradition is known as came through Manjushri and carry out like Nagarjuna and the Chandrakirti song. The way they carried out is the written commentaries on the literal meaning of the Pranjanaparamita Sutra. And that is the way continued the tradition of the wisdom understanding the emptiness, one thing, and Asanga continued the tradition of the teaching on the process of developing completion of the compassion and altruistic mind. So let's say that the meaning of the complete meaning of the Pranjanaparamita is so profound, so vast, so deep, because it has a meaning of the wisdom understanding emptiness. It has a meaning that process of one can develop great compassion. One can develop the way, the process of the altruistic mind. We call it bodhicitta. Okay, bodhicitta. And both Asanga and Nagarjuna, they really carried out the tradition as written the commentaries that explained explicitly the both like wisdom understanding and altruistic mind and compassion. So those two are known as the ornament of the Jambuling. We call it Jambuling means, let's say, the nowadays we may have to use the word of the planet, where you have the four continents. Okay. But ancient time we say just one Jambuling. Okay. But I don't find the contradictions between And if you have the questions, we can have a discussion at the end. So now the fourth line, where Lama Tsongkhapa expressed his homage to the great Atisha, who was the responsible person, found the tradition of the Lamrim. When great Atisha came to Tibet around the 10th and 11th century, I'm not good at the history, but at my vague and at the back of my head telling me that great Atisha was in Tibet around the 10th and 11th century. Okay. Great Atisha was the main lineage holder of both lineage of the practicing the whole process of developing altruistic mind and compassion, that's one lineage, and the lineage that wisdom, understanding, emptiness. So great Atisha was the lineage holder during that period in India, and came to Tibet at the invitation extended by Western Tibetan king known as Lhalama Changchubo and Lhalama Yishod. And when great Atisha arrived in Tibet, and the request was not, I feel very proud of the saying, I'm teaching Lamrim because of the history of the Lamrim. Great Atisha was requested by the Tibetan king at his arrival, saying, I want you to give a teaching that more relevant for the society and the community. Relevant for the... Nowadays, His Holiness says human... quality, the good qualities of the human being, good qualities of the human being. Something like tangible, something like touching the earth. So King was in Tibet was very practical, and he was very much concerned the subject, his subject. Community of the Tibet, needs of the community, was the realistic teaching, and very much expressing the needs of importance of the practicing cause and causality, cause and effect. That's also what it means, okay. King of the Tibet was not looking for the miracle powers and the clear voice and so forth. Of course, the many the people, the disciples, capable disciples can practice and they can make great achievements from it. But ordinary people and the common people cannot practice. So the king of the Tibet requests the great Atisha, saying, I want you to teach my subject, community of Tibet, the teaching that is more realistic and more like tangible. And the great Atisha was so pleased, being not asked to give the initiations and so forth, but being asked to give the teaching on Lamrim. Okay. Lamrim was born at the request from the king of the Tibet during that period. Namjoon was born at the request. Request is that very much related to the realistic viewpoint. So Lama Tsongkhapa was very much respecting to great Atisha, and the fourth line is expressing his homage to great Atisha. And I'm not going to go into details of the great Atisha's the life stories. So now let's go and recite the Lama Tsongkhapa's the verses. In English first, I'd like to request you. Okay. Great Atisha, who was a lineage holder of both traditions, tradition of the wisdom understanding of Shunyata, and the lineage that practicing the process of the great compassion in the altruistic mind, and that also having the complete the technique. Techniques and practice of them, and personal instructions. Great Atisha was holding, so Lama Tsongkhapa is very much appreciating his teaching, and he liked to express that he's grateful and respect to the great Atisha. So that means if the great Atisha did not come to Tibet and teaching lineage of the Lamrim, teaching of the Lamrim would not have born in Tibet, and the more likely great Atisha would not have founded the lineage of the Lamrim even in India, because and some way the story tells that in India there was no need of the Lamrim teaching, and India unlike in Tibet, where you had the needs of the finding the lineage of the or teaching of the Lamrim in Tibet. And maybe one of the moving story was that when great Atisha received the invitation from Tibetan king, not only one time but many, many times, and at the end the Tibetan king even sacrificed his life, and at the cost of the sending invitations to great Atisha, and the great Atisha was consulting with his main deity known as Green Tara, and great Atisha consulting that if he visited Tibet, will that be beneficial or not? And the Green Tara was telling him that it's going to be great benefit. It's going to give a great benefit to the people of the Tibet. The only problem will be that your lifespan is going to be shortened, and but your service for the spreading Dharma and going to benefit them. You're going to reach them, the many, many disciples. the particularly you are going to meet the disciple known as Drama Tenpa in Tibet. So great Adishan said, okay, if it's going to be beneficial and he can reach the needs of thousands of the Tibetan disciples, he wouldn't mind to shorten his lifespan. So he decided and he came to Tibet and he did not return to his homeland, and he passed away in Tibet, great Adishan. So I would say for the cost of the finding Lamrim teaching, he sacrificed his lifespan. So the Lamrim teaching, okay, the value of the Lamrim teaching was great, worth it, sacrificing great Adishan's life. So to me, that is something really moving. Shingda chenpo nyi le lek dupe, samu tanga jashin chupe nam, mamur yong su tobe ne dupe, dambe zun zun marmi jalan duz. Okay, now, I would like you to recite the fifth line. We are paying homage to individuals, teachers. And here it is relevant to pay individual your teachers. We have to pay respect to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who came to your center many, many times and gave precious teachings. Secondly, he came to the center, Kyabji Song Rinpoche, who came here, if I'm correct, he came to the center maybe one or two times and gave teachings. And then also Lati Rinpoche, he came to your center many times and gave enormous amount of the teachings. And particularly, you should pay homage to the late Geshe Gyaltsen, who was the responsible person establishing the center, Dhamma Center, in Long Beach. And we can say, throughout his life, he reached many of you, the teachings of the Lamrim, not only teachings of the Lamrim, but many initiations, many teachings. So he would be your teacher, the person that your homage should go to. So I would like you recite the fifth line while you are remembering Geshe line. Jam sungrab guna tawe mik kesang tharba dupin jungon cho tsewe kyebe thangi jabai senje shingi namla kucha ses. Individuals, we have the teachers, lamas and teachers. Without their kindness, we would not have met the teaching of the Lord Buddha. We would not have the opportunity of the practicing, the process of developing compassion, great compassion process, and that we would not have made, we would not have the opportunity to practice the process of developing altruistic mind. We would not have the opportunity to practice wisdom, understanding emptiness, we would not have received the teaching on the Lumbering. We believe that tantric masters are very kind, great masters, very kind masters. But the teacher, you are individual teachers who even taught you the short teachings of the Lord Buddha, any kind of short, would be equally important, equally kind. Usually, you are known. We know that the teacher, whose instructions and the personal advice that reached you at the bottom of your heart and the center of your heart, and they're given the heart moving, subduing your wild mind and the feelings. That will be the known as the root gurus. Okay, we call it the root guru, who subdued our wild mind. Our mind is a wild because of the jumping from here to there, there to here. We wanted to achieve something, but when we achieve it, it's not a satisfying us. We are looking further and the greater and the bigger and the never ending. And that is the sense of the wild. Now, who can subdue that sort of the mind? The only our teacher. He can subdue it. Your parents cannot do it. Your husband, wives cannot do it. Your boyfriend, girlfriends cannot do it. And your society cannot do it. Your president cannot do it. Your secretary cannot do it. There is only one person can do it. That would be your personal root teacher. Okay, he can do it. So that is the meaning of the your root teacher, root guru, and that it's worth to pay homage and the respect throughout the lifetime, throughout the many lifetimes. And he will be the like eye that we can see the enormous amount of the teachings that presented by Lord Buddha Shakyamuni. Without his mind, without his teaching and the guidance, we would not have the chance to receive them and understand them. Okay, I would like to request you. To read the sixth line.
The stages of the path to enlightenment have been transmitted intact by those that have followed in order of the old Arjuna and Sasa. Those tiny jewels of all the ancestors of Sasa. The manner of those things stands out above the masses. As all of these stages,
now I realize something else. In the midst of my teaching, I realize something. That is my watch on my wrist. My watch says something different. My watch says that it is the program should end soon. And it's 10 minutes to 9. So we should have some period of time for discussion, like raising questions, question and answering period we should have. And so I try to recover the length of the teaching and the limited period we have. I try tomorrow and the day after tomorrow, so I hope I can make it. So now this is a period, we have 10 minutes. 10 minutes we should use for answering question. Yes, please.
Why was the long run not needed in India?
Why was the Lam Rim? You had commented that Atisha had given the Lam Rim teachings in Tibet, and you said it was needed in Tibet, but not in India. So that's my question.
I'm normally saying that Indian Buddhist masters would not need it because of they can. They can individual Indian masters, so they can formulate the practice of the Mahayana path that involved the process of the great compassion and altruistic mind and wisdom understanding of the emptiness. Can individual Indian Buddhist masters, so they can work it out by themselves. But because of that, Tibet is a remote area, and far away from India, and not only far away, but there were many other things going on. So there was a need of the clarifications and the formation of the Lam Rim teaching. So make the individual Tibetan Buddhist practitioners can follow without confusion. I think that was the common explanation.
So you were saying that the Lam Rim was first written in the Tibetan language and then later translated into other languages, are you?
I would like you say once again, because I could not I couldn't follow your first round.
Oh, I this is better, I guess. I'm asking whether the Lam Rim was first written in the Tibetan language and then later translated into various other languages.
No, I would say that because of the when Atisha came to Tibet, I think his Tibetan wasn't good enough. Compose the teaching of the Lam Rim in Tibetan. He would have composed in Sanskrit first. And his main disciples, qualified translators, were around, and they would have translated the lamp of the path to enlightenment from Sanskrit, original language, Sanskrit, into Tibetan language. And then, but then, that original text, the titled Lamp of the Path to Enlightenment, was composed in Tibet, and later on, one copy, has been sent back to India, where many Indian masters and pandits read it out and kind of the community and more like a meeting at a conference. Everyone in the meeting were enjoyed and so grateful and saying that, well, if that is the way what Atisha was doing in Tibet, so it was good
that Adisha went to Tibet. Normally we feel that it's a great kind of absence of the Adisha in India. We needed Adisha in India very much, but if Adisha remained in Tibet, in India, didn't go to Tibet, this would not have founded. And unanimously agreed the teaching of the Lamrim that Adisha composed in Tibet. And also Adisha's visit to Tibet was completely approved, and since then said, okay, now Adisha, you can remain in Tibet as long as you think it's necessary. So the permission of the his extension of the his visa in Tibet.
You mentioned that Adisha went to Tibet, and then after he gave the Lamrim teaching that he passed away. I was just wondering, how old was Adisha, and how soon after he gave the teaching did he pass away?
I think, if I don't make a mistake, I think Adisha spent about 17 years in Tibet. 17 years in Tibet. And he composed the lamp of the path to enlightenment was at the beginning, very early on, his visit to Tibet, and he composed. And then later on he was traveling from western part of Tibet to Lhasa and that area, and the great Adisha passed in the area known as Naphtham. Nithang.
Shana.
When it says about, I'm not quite clear on who Maitreya and Manjushri are. Are they actually physical students of Buddha, or are they aspects of Buddha? That's not clear to me.
Do you mean Manjushri and the Maitreya Buddhas are the historical disciple of the Lord Buddha, or is that your question?
Yeah, or are they aspects of Buddha's teaching? Represented of different parts of how we, you know, how we see him.
Usually, we see Maitreya Buddha and Manjushri Buddha as physically manifested lineage holders of Lord Buddha Shakyamuni's teaching. So that means. Or the normal, common people could meet them and discuss them and exchange the viewpoint.
So that means they were actually people. They weren't just a spiritual type.
When we say people, it sounds a bit funny, but they were the physical manifestation of the. Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, physical manifestation. It looks like a human.
I see. Okay. I think I understand what you're saying there. Okay. Almost like their manifestation physically of him, but they weren't...
Physically present there.
That's how they present themselves.
Yeah, present themselves, yeah.
I understand now. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Rinpoche, you were making reference to the hidden implications of Prajnaparamita, and I was wondering if you could talk about that a little bit. And is that a controversy in other lineages of Buddhism? It almost sounded as if you were saying these are the origins of of bodhicitta or of the Mahayana path?
As far as I know, the two different lineages have been discovered or formed on the basis of the teachings of the Paramita Sutra. The known as one is the hidden lineage, one is the literal meaning. I think that's been commonly accepted among the different schools of the Tibetan Buddhism, like between Gelugpa tradition and the Nyingma tradition, Sakya tradition, Kagyu tradition. I think that, to my understanding, it's unanimously accepted the hidden meaning and the literal meaning. That concept has been accepted. And the meaning hidden means when you read the Paramita Sutra, you don't see the structure of that process, how one can develop the compassion, great compassion, and how one can develop the process of altruistic mind, the bodhicitta. It's not clearly shown in Paramita Sutra. What Paramita Sutra shows clearly is emptiness. Like Heart Sutra says, there's no eye, there's no ear, there's no nose, there's no tongue, no forms, no nothing. It's a nothing, 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 nothing. That is the known as literal or clearly or verbally expression of the Paramita Sutra. But the process of the developing compassion and altruistic mind is not clearly shown. It's a need to be explained. We need the masters who can explain the process of the developing compassion and altruistic mind and the connections of the teaching of the Paramita Sutra. So that is the meaning of the hidden subject or hidden meaning. Hidden means you cannot see it clearly, but you can understand it through the teachings, explanations given by like Nagarjuna, Asanga, and Maitreya Buddha's teachings. I think now it is 9 o'clock already, so I would like to end this session, first session, and looking forward to see tomorrow afternoon, I think. And thank you very much for your time and spending your valuable time and 1.5 hours with me, so I appreciate it. And that allowed me to practice, improved my English as well. Okay, thank you. Yeah.
Jabana Majidraj. Jabana Majidraj.